Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it is Friday, so it is time for another classic episode. This episode is How Segways Work, and it originally published on March 27th, 2013. Segways were supposed to truly transform everything. The prediction was that they were going to make cities completely different. I would argue that that didn't happen, but we probably saw them pave the way, for lack of a better word, for the e-scooter revolution that started around 2018. But let's sit back and listen to this classic episode.
Lauren, you pointed out to me that we as in Tech Stuff, recorded an episode about Dean Kamen, who is the founder of Segway, a long, long time ago.
A very long time ago.
Back in 2008.
Yeah, well, he's done a whole bunch of other really cool stuff.
Yeah, he invented a thing called a Luke arm, which is a robotic arm meant for people who have lost a limb.
Yeah, we talk a bit about that in a whole other podcast thing we're doing.
Yeah, over at Forward Thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great show. You guys, if you haven't checked out Forward Thinking, you should definitely check it out. It's great stuff. He also invented a water purification device called the Slingshot, which can take pretty much anything that has water content in it and purify it into drinkable water.
Oh, wow, cool.
So you could take sewage and put it through this thing, and it would actually produce clean, drinkable water. And it's meant for communities that have trouble accessing clean water. Fantastic thing.
Yeah.
And he's partnered with some pretty big companies for that. But the Segway, I think, is where a lot of people know Dean Kamen. Like, they heard about it that because of the Segway.
Well, it got a great deal of publicity, which we will talk about later in the episode, because it was the hype for it can really only be called hype. It was very intense.
It was like if you had heard that this rock and roll band that had not released an album in like 10 years was getting back together to do their first studio album, In a decade. And that would be kind of similar to the hype buildup.
And
that
not only were they going to do an album, but they were going to revolutionize the entire music industry with this album.
That's fair.
The level.
Yeah, that's fair. So we'll talk about that in a bit. But first, we wanted to kind of talk about actually what it was and how it worked. So if you were to look at one of these things, in case you have not seen it, it looks like a little two-wheeled scooter, but the wheels are side by side. They're not in line with one another. They're side by side. And when you would stand on a platform with the left wheel to your left and the right wheel to your right, there's a bar that comes straight up vertically from the platform. There are handlebars
attached
to it.
Little handlebars that you hold on to. Mm-hmm.
And then when you lean, it moves. When you lean forward, it starts to move forward. When you lean backward, it stops. If you lean back enough, it'll go backward a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's...
And the new models these days, when you tilt the handlebars, that is how you steer.
Yeah. In the original one, you would twist one of the handlebars, the right handlebars.
Like revving a motorcycle style.
Exactly. And if you twisted one way, it would turn left, and if you twist the other way, it turns right. And the way it turns is kind of cool. When you lean forward, both wheels engage and start moving forward.
Simultaneously, correct.
When you turn, only one wheel starts to move in one direction, and the other wheel allows you to pivot on a dime.
Right. Yeah, it's a turning radius of zero.
Yeah, a zero turning radius, which is pretty amazing. And we'll talk about what he intended this device to do in the second half, I think. But first, we wanted to kind of talk about the actual technology that makes this possible. And Dean Kamen, before he had gone into developing the Segway, had already started to work on some pretty cool systems. He did some work on motorized wheelchairs that were capable of doing things like climbing up staircases. And that work kind of led him to the idea of, what if I created a device that could transport people at a good clip and make it so that it works on the same principle as what it's like when you're walking.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're walking...
So it's intuitive, yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. It works in a way that feels natural to us. Although, I will tell you, the first time you get on a Segway, nothing feels natural about it.
I haven't actually been on one. You have?
I have. I've been on a Segway. I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. But have you ever engaged in an activity where the first step requires you to do something that feels totally unnatural to you? So there's like your body is actually resisting what you have to do.
Basically, that's me walking every day. But I mean, but for example, when I switched from a WASD keyboard first-person shooters to Xbox controller, I was like, what is this?
See, for me, what I think of is like the first time when I was a little kid that I ever tried snorkeling. Because I put my face in the water, and my body's telling me, for goodness sakes, man, whatever you do, don't breathe in. You're underwater. And, you know, my rest of my brain is saying, foolish, scary reptile brain, that's not anything to worry about. You have a tube to the air, which is unobstructed. You can breathe all you like. And it took... That leaped, not literally, I didn't literally leap, but...
It's hard to in water.
No, yeah, I couldn't get enough traction. But it took that mental leap to get to a point where I felt comfortable. Same sort of thing on a Segway, because the way it works is that you start to lean forward as if you're going to take a step.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically what walking is controlled falling.
Right, yeah.
I mean, you're throwing the upper part of your body forward.
Uh-huh.
You're essentially unbalancing yourself. And then
counting on one leg or the other in sequence,
yeah.
hypothetically, to
exactly.
catch you, right?
Yeah, you're constantly catching yourself with your legs. Especially if you're walking at a good pace, you know, you'll see people, they're leaning into it. And that weight is what's helping them propel forward. And then they swing a leg out, which catches them, stops them from falling. And they use that leg to push them forward and then the other leg and so on. So far, then it's something that once we start to learn how to walk, it just becomes natural to us. We don't even think about it.
Oh, right. Well, we've got all kinds of really, really intricate inner ear sensory mechanisms to tell us when we're balanced and when we're off balanced and how everything is going. It's such an automatic process that when you're not two, you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. And what's also funny is that same system of sensors that we have in our brain. Well, two things are funny. One thing is that a lot of that informed Dean Kamen when he was designing the Segway. He wanted to have a mechanical means to sort of recreate that. And the other thing is that these sensors are not foolproof.
Sure.
We can fool ourselves. This is partially what leads us to things like motion sickness, mm-hmm. where we get one set of input from a set of senses telling us one thing and a different set of input from other senses telling us another thing. And that conflict makes our brain say, okay, if that's how you're going to play it, we're losing lunch. That's it.
Uh-huh.
Someone who has suffered from car sickness, motion sickness that way, strangely enough, never got seasick, but I've been motion sick from a car before. But anyway, so they are fallible, these systems in our brains and in the Segway, as it turns out. So Dean Kamen wanted to create the Segway in such a way that it would require you to lean forward as if you were going to take a step, and that would be the indicator to move.
Right, and then sort of trust the machine. I imagine that's where you have your initial problem.
Yes.
Because you're leaning forward and you're not catching yourself.
Yeah, and you know, you've already been told, do not take your foot off the platform to step and catch yourself, because then you run yourself over. So not only
right.
do you not
you
catch
wearing,
yourself,
you are wearing a helmet at the time, hypothetically. But,
yes, I was wearing a helmet at the mm-hmm. time. That was a requirement.
Right.
I want to say that I was at Disney when I did this. It was at some park, and I think it was Disney. And it was not the full Epcot tour, which we can talk about. I've got a little factoid on that. There is a tour, that very popular tour at Epcot, that uses Segways. It wasn't that. It was just a little, like, familiarize yourself with this technology thing. And I was mm-hmm. like, I've always wanted to do this, and that's when I tried it. So I've only done it the one time, and I really would love to have more time with it, because it was an interesting experience. But yes, it requires you to move forward as if you were going to take a step, but not take your weight completely off your foot. Just lean forward as if you were about to start walking, and that makes the Segway go.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Now, the way it does that is it has a complex system of gyroscopes inside to kind of let it know what orientation the Segway is in relative to the ground.
Right. It has 5 gyroscopes, in fact. Technically, it's really only using 3 of them. 2 of them are fail-safes.
Yeah.
But
yeah, 3 of them are meant to detect things like forward, leaning forward, leaning backward, and tilt to the left or right.
Right. Okay, but so a gyroscope, let's talk about what a gyroscope is, because this is a little bit integral.
Yeah.
So it's basically just a spinning wheel inside a frame.
Yeah, the frame itself is stable and free. The spinning wheel has it's rotating around an axis.
Sure.
Right? So you've got the axis at the center of the wheel. The wheel rotates. And then it resists changes, forces that would change the alignment of that gyroscope. So,
because if you push on the spinning wheel, it's just going to transfer into.
It's called precessing.
Okay.
This is this is an interesting thing. It's one of those things that's kind of difficult to explain in an audio podcast. First of all, let me tell you that at HowStuffWorks.com, we have an article on how gyroscopes work, which includes video showing what I'm about to talk about. So if you have trouble visualizing what I'm about to explain,
despite the fact that we're both gesticulating wildly.
Yeah, I mean, there's only so much I can get across in radio, right? But you can go there and look it up. But what a gyroscope does is this whole thing of precessing is, imagine that you have a bicycle wheel suspended from a string. So
okay.
The string's tied to the ceiling somewhere. The bicycle wheel's hanging down. The string is tied to the axis of the wheel, so it could still spin freely, okay?
Got it.
Now, if you were to align that wheel so it's vertical relative to the ground, so the wheel is as if it was on a bicycle that you were riding down the street,
sure.
Okay? The string is tied to one side of that axis. So there's a string that's coming down on one side of the axis. The other side of the axis doesn't have a string tied to it. So there's nothing to keep it vertical.
Okay.
If you were to just let go, that wheel would flop down into the horizontal formation. It would just be parallel to the ground.
Correct.
More or less. If you were to turn it vertical and then start spinning the wheel, it would remain vertical.
Really?
And it would slowly begin to rotate around the string. So that's the precession, is that it's rotating around a different axis perpendicular to the one of its main motion. Now, why is it staying vertical as opposed to flopping over? The reason for that is that if you were to apply a force to, say, Let's say you've got the bicycle wheel spinning in your arms. Okay, you're holding the axis in front of you, and the wheel is vertical, and you've got it spinning. You can do this. I've seen science museums that have had this, where you sit in a swivel chair and you hold the bicycle wheel in front of you, like you extend your arms out so that the wheel can spin freely in front of you. If you try and tilt that wheel, you'll feel resistance. And the reason for that is that imagine that, take a still image, like you're able to freeze time.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, I can, so yeah.
All right, well, that's good. And you're going to tilt the wheel so that the top of the wheel, from your perspective, would be moving to the left, and the bottom of the wheel would be moving to the right. You're tilting it on a diagonal, okay? Now, as that wheel is spinning, the point where you would be turning it to the left, that's you're applying a force to that section. So imagine a spot at the very top of the wheel, at the vertical apex of that wheel.
Uh-huh.
Okay? That's where you're applying the force to move to the left. Now, the wheel's actually spinning, so if we were to jump ahead 20 frames, now the point is directly in front of the wheel. It's no longer at the top. It is rotated around to be in the front. And it still wants to go toward the left. Go ahead another 20 frames. Now the point is at the bottom of the wheel. It still wants to go to the left, but the force you're applying is trying to make the bottom of the wheel go to the right. So the force you're applying is trying to push the wheel's direction in one way, but because that reference point was at the top at the beginning and it's still trying to go to the left from when you were applying the force at the very beginning, those two forces cancel each other out. It resists the force to make it move in a different direction. And then you also have the precession. So if you're sitting in a swivel chair, you start to spin around. It's kind of fun. This is a great, cheap way to entertain small children. Anyway... It's an interesting fact of physics is that, you know, a gyroscope in this stable frame will react in this way.
But so, okay, so the point of gyroscopes being in devices like this is that if you measure the position of the spinning wheel inside of its frame, you can determine the pitch and the pitch rate.
Yeah, exactly. You're looking at, like, the frame itself can move freely within the confines of whatever it is you're talking
whatever
about.
Whatever device you're talking
right,
about.
Whether it could be a Segway, it could be an airplane, it could be a phone. And so it can move freely within that context, and it may be a solid state drive, as is the case with the Segway. It
right.
may not be an actual physical gyroscope.
Yeah. And we'll get into that in just a second.
Right. And but if you're able to do that in such a way, then the gyroscope and the pitch detection will allow will give enough information so that some sort of processor can take that information in and know what orientation the Segway is in relative to the ground.
Right.
So by detecting these changes and by detecting the forces that are enacting upon these different gyroscopes, the Segway can interpret that and say, oh, I should engage the motor to drive forward, or I should stop, or I should
move backward.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. I should probably put up a warning because this guy is really leaning over a bit too far.
Right. So the kind of gyroscopes that are in a Segway are these solid state angular rate sensors.
Yes.
That are basically the way that I understand it, it's a little silicon plate.
Yes.
And I think I actually said that the correct way the first time.
Yes, you did.
Win.
It's silicon, not silicone. You're exactly right.
two separate issues. And so it's a silicon plate mounted on a support frame.
Yes.
And you run an electrostatic current across the plate.
Uh-huh.
It wiggles the silicon particles around.
Yes.
And makes the plate as a whole vibrate in a very predictable way.
Right.
And when there's a physical change in the forces...
Meaning when you've tilted in some way.
Yeah. When you physically move the plate on its axis.
Uh-huh.
Axis.
Yes.
Talking is great. The particles suddenly shift and the vibration changes.
Right. And by changing of vibration, you know that there's a change in the state that you are in, whether that's a tilt or, you know, whatever other thing you might have this gyroscope in. But in the case of the Segway, we're talking about specifically the tilt of the Segway itself.
Right. So if you hook a computer up to this, it can measure the precise change.
Right, and interpret it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So if it says, like, oh, it's changed a little bit, like the vibration has changed a little bit, indicating that the person is starting to lean forward, time to engage the motors. If it's changed a lot, it might mean that the person has leaned forward pretty hard, which indicates that you should move at a faster pace.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got these motors that will engage in order to activate the wheels, and the wheels begin to turn, and that's where you get the motion. So the thing that's keeping this all going is... you've got the gyroscopic sensors, that's giving the information, but then you have two circuit boards that have controllers on them, has 10 microprocessors total in the original Segway. And those microprocessors are what's taking in all this information and translating it into action.
Yeah, yeah, that first one, the microprocessors would check the position sensors about 100 times per second.
That's right. Yeah, so that way it can make sure that it's giving the right information to the motors so that you're moving at the right speed compared to how you are how you're physically manipulating the Segway.
Right, right. It's also got in there a couple of tilt sensors filled with electrolyte fluid, electrolytes being, of course, what plants crave.
Thank you. Brondo.
Which is, again, just like your inner ear.
It's your inner ear has fluid in it, and that's what helps you determine what your orientation is relative to your environment. This is why, one of the reasons why, when people go up in the Vomit Comet,
mm-hmm.
that's why it's called that. Because when you're in the Vomit Comet, you're the sensory information you're getting from your eyes and from your what you're feeling is so different from what your inner ear is trying to make sense of when this fluid is suddenly
Yeah, yeah. It's basically you've just got this little sensor in your head where you've got a level of fluid, and that is how you calibrate yourself to the ground based on where the fluid is tilting.
Right, and in a free fall motion, that information ends up being a little weird, and so a lot of people end up, again, losing their lunch,
mm-hmm.
which is why they often refer to the planes that take these flights as the Vomit Comet. Yeah, but it is interesting that the Segway itself has this electrolyte. Now, Grant, you don't have to worry about your Segway losing its lunch. Don't worry about that part. That part, similarity has now ended. But other than that, it is using a very similar approach to detect tilt as the way humans do, which, again, kind of cool that Dean Kamen is taking direction from the way our bodies do stuff to help inform him on the way he makes technology.
I blame it on his extensive medical background.
And again, the Luke arm, another example of that,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
He's taking that, how do humans do things and how can we make technology that emulates this?
Yeah, he was also, when he was in college, he invented the first drug injection pump. And later, the first portable insulin pump,
which is part of how he made such huge amounts of money. And the cool thing to me is that it's obvious that what drives him is a desire to innovate
and to help people.
Yeah,
and he talks very passionately. There's some really, really good interviews with him. We'll link them on social, where he's talking about watching people use his inventions for the first time and them people who haven't been able to move this way ever.
Yeah.
And in some cases, and them, and just the amount of pride and just awesome that happens.
Yeah.
When
the
that
fact
goes.
that is what really gives him an incentive to continue. Yeah. It's pretty interesting stuff. It's a really cool story. And in fact, there's a whole section of the Segway story that we need to get into, which involves the whole hype issue. And a little bit more about the original Segway models that came out and some controversy that Segway has had over the years. We'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, before we do that, let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's segue back into our episode,
oh,
shall we?
Oh, no.
I couldn't resist. And so just a few more facts about the original Segway. Keep in mind that they've made several different models over the course of the Segway's life.
Mm-hmm.
But the earlier ones, they had a top speed of about 12.5 miles per hour, which is around 20 kilometers per hour.
Oh, right. I think in some other countries it was maybe 13.5, but yes.
Yeah. It all depended on, it also depended on which model you had. Because they did do a range of them.
Sure.
We have an article on our site, How the Segway Works, and that one we specifically looked at the Segway HT, which was one of the earlier models.
Mm-hmm.
It required about 6 hours of charging. It had a range of around 17 miles, which was about 28 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And the current Segways are called PT, which stands for Personal Transporter, and they have a whole line of them that do different things.
Yeah, for
like city travel versus off-road.
Versus security purposes. They've got one specifically for golf courses.
Yep. They've got some where they have like all these containers on them so that you can carry stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to transport things. Granted, none of them are going to replace the minivan. So soccer moms are not going to be able to. I mean, I guess you could maybe tie a couple of red wagons behind and just like a mama duck.
I was really waiting for you to say, like, small children to the handlebars, and I was like, I don't think that's...
I wouldn't advocate that. I wouldn't advocate the wagons, actually, either. That would be a disaster. But anyway, the motors of those early Segways had about 2 horsepower worth of power and had a 2-stage transmission with a 24-to-1 gear ratio with a helical gear assembly. And it was actually a harmonic assembly.
Yeah, they engineered it so that the sounds, the two meshes in the gearbox were exactly 2 octaves apart.
Right.
So they would harmonize.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Some might say crazy. It weighed, the original, the HT, the one that we talked about in our article, weighed about 83 pounds, which is about 38 kilograms. And it could carry a person of up to 260 pounds, which is about 118 kilograms, or, for my friends in England, 18.5 stone. It had 2 lithium-ion batteries to supply power.
Rechargeable.
Obviously, you wouldn't want to have to plop out a different battery every 15 to 17 miles or so.
Bad times.
And it used an electronic key system with 128-bit encrypted digital code. So you had this key that would plug into...
It's sort of like a little like flash drive-shaped thing.
Yeah.
Except you wouldn't have called it that then, because...
Right. You would have called it... Well, you could have called it that then. They'd had flash at that point, but it really wasn't. But it was a digital key that has 128-bit encrypted code on it so that the Segway will only work with that code. And you don't have to worry about someone, not necessarily not have to worry about it, but if someone did run off with your Segway, they couldn't use it.
Right. They would have to literally lift it up and move it away, kind of defeats the point.
Right.
Purpose.
Right. So that's the basic model that we talked about in our podcast, our article, but there are quite a few other ones that are out now. Like I said, there's the i2, which is your basic normal terrain Segway,
and then there's the x2, which is the
the off-road,
yes,
X2 Adventure.
Off-road.
X2 Adventure, off-road travel. Yeah, and they've even got some that were, you know, they worked with DARPA to design a kind of Segway that was used as a platform for robotics.
Right.
They've created different models like three-wheeled and four-wheeled vehicles based on the Segway technology various things. Here in Atlanta, we have Atlanta ambassadors. These are people who are in downtown Atlanta who often help out during big events, like when something's going on downtown and there's going to be a lot of people there. These folks are there to kind of help give directions and someone's like, hey, I'm looking for the Georgia Aquarium. Where do I go from here? I was, oh, you need to walk down this two blocks and take a left, that kind of thing. A lot of them have Segways. So I see them whenever I'm downtown for, you know, Dragon Con or St. Patrick's Day Parade, which at the time of this recording will be in just a couple of days. But they have them. I've seen them in airports. A lot of airports I've seen especially airport security on these. I've seen police on these.
Mm-hmm. They were big at the Beijing Olympics in 2008.
In fact, I want to say that I think the most I ever saw at one point was actually at Epcot. Because like I said, Epcot Center, not Epcot Center, they used to be called Epcot Center. I was there when it opened because, as Lauren has pointed out numerous times, I'm old. But I remember going to Epcot and seeing people on these, and that was probably the first time I saw them in person. But go back to when it was unveiled, or even before it was unveiled, came up with the idea in the late 90s, like 99.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this idea of creating devices that could operate on pedestrian sidewalks and paths. And in 2001, the company that would become Segway broke ground on its manufacturing plant in New Hampshire, which is where Dean Kamen's from.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they broke ground in February and I think completed it in November.
Yep, right in November, December. And they adopted the name Segway in December 2001. And that's actually when they unveiled the Segway, the first models of it, on Good Morning America, a television program that's kind of a news-oriented television program here in the United States. And I actually saw this. I saw the unveiling episode.
You stayed home from work.
I didn't stay home from work. I delayed leaving. am I going to get in trouble? I mean, I haven't worked for this company in years. 2001, I was not working for How Stuff Works. I was not here. I was working for a totally different company. I did drag my feet leaving the house that morning because I knew that this was happening. Everywhere in the news, it had been that there was going to be this incredible, incredible device. And it had two code names that I recall off the top of my head. One was IT.
Right. All caps, IT. Like the scary clown.
And then the other one was, nice, Pennywise. The other one was Tim Curry was the television adaptation.
Creepy
of
guy.
Stephen King. The second one was Ginger.
Ginger, yeah. And that was, it had been codenamed Ginger based on the fact that the wheelchair that Decca had designed earlier was called Fred Upstairs within the lab, based on Fred Astaire.
Right.
Because they were saying that it just dances right up the stairs.
Right.
Magically.
It was a wheelchair that could climb stairs.
Uh-huh. So
Fred and then Ginger.
And so Ginger.
And
so
of course, Ginger could do everything Fred could do backwards. In heels. So not that the Segway necessarily did, but it's just one of my favorite little quotes.
But a journalist had started writing this book called Codename Ginger.
Uh-huh.
And it was leaked at the beginning of 2001, I think by Inside.com.
Okay.
And this is, I think, what really created all of this insane hype.
Right.
Because it was the book took such pains to not talk specifically about what this machine did.
But it was going to change the world.
And you got these quotes from people like Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
That were like, this is going to be bigger than the PC.
Again, without it actually revealing what it was that the people who had found out about it said it was going to be this phenomenal technology that was going to fundamentally change the way we live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was built up so much. I mean, hype is seems like a...
Like a good thing, hypothetically.
Well, I was going to say that hype is probably not even strong enough of a word, considering that, you know, the deliverables that were being promised on based on this technology that no one outside of a very small group of people had any knowledge about.
People were saying that cities were going to be redesigned around this thing,
right.
and that it was going to be bigger than the internet.
Yeah, and then Good Morning America had its unveiling. And before the show, I remember, like, days before the show aired, there were already rumors that it was going to be some sort of motorized scooter device. And this was based off patents that had been filed, as well as Dean Kamen's previous work with the wheelchairs and things of that nature. And so when it actually happened, like, I was hoping at the time that it wasn't going to end up being a scooter, because I was thinking, like, if it's something totally different, that's going to be awesome. If it's a scooter, it still could be awesome, but it's going to be something that's not going to be as cool as if it were something totally out of left field. And then I saw it and I thought, well, that's interesting, but is it really going to change the world? And I understood what they were going for. They were saying that, you know, especially in cities, particularly in cities, which is where the majority of people tend to live, not that there aren't plenty of people out in rural areas.
Population density, yeah.
Yeah, you've got very dense populations in cities, that traffic is a real problem. You've got people who are getting in their cars to go relatively short distances to do basic stuff. Like here in Atlanta, there's...
I think we mentioned the traffic on the show about once every other episode.
Well,
but yeah.
And not just traffic, though. I was going to say that we don't have... Like, our public transportation system is not... doesn't measure up to public transportation systems in some other cities, like D.C. or New York or Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we do have one, and you can use it, but it's just not ideal. It's not... doesn't run as frequently as some other cities, and it doesn't...
doesn't go to as many places.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So that means that if you want to get around Atlanta and you want to do it effectively, you pretty much have to have a car. And the idea was that for cities like Atlanta and other cities that have similar issues, the Segway could end up allowing you to go further than you would if you were on foot, and not clog up all the streets. So it would alleviate traffic problems.
Mm-hmm.
It would start, because it's an electric vehicle, it does not actually generate any greenhouse gases or toxins, although you could argue that depending on how the electricity was generated, that's still a problem. It's just not being created by the vehicle itself.
It's not direct. It's just a couple steps.
Yeah, exactly. But that would also be a thing, and that it would, it could really be a big benefit. But for that to work, you have to have an infrastructure that supports that kind of transportation.
At the very least, bike lanes.
Or really wide sidewalks.
Really wide sidewalks. One of the big things that that DECA and Segway were trying to do was create legislature that would allow the Segway to go on sidewalks.
Right.
And they had huge pushback from a lot of communities. I think that it's that they're banned entirely on sidewalks in the UK, maybe?
In some places they are. I know in some cities they definitely are.
It varies state by state and municipality by municipality.
It probably doesn't surprise you to know that the first state to legalize the Segway on pedestrian sidewalks was, in fact, New Hampshire,
right,
where the Segway was located. It was that was passed into law on February 15th, 2002. And it wasn't until November 18th, 2002 that Segways went on sale to the public for the first time on Amazon.com.
Right.
Hey, guys, I want to take a break here. I want to transition from this episode into an ad break. So we're going to call that a segue.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life.
Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
2005 was when Disney World was introducing the Around the World at Epcot Segway Tour. So for those who have not been to Epcot, it's divided into two big sections. You have the Future World section, where it's all about energy and transportation and the things that are going to be important to us in the years to come and kind of the innovations that we can expect, or maybe even stuff that, you know, is really far out there. Maybe it'll never happen. That kind of thing. The other one is the World Showcase, which has, it's almost like a permanent World's Fair.
Yeah.
It has it has different pavilions that represent various countries in the world. And they are the Around the World Segway Tour was a Segway tour that would take you around the World Showcase. And it was like a 2-hour long tour, and it would allow you to start to explore the World Showcase a couple of hours before it was open to the general public. Because the way that Epcot works, or at least it used to, I assume it still does, is when the doors would open, meaning that when they let you into the park, you could only go into the Future World part for the first couple of hours. The World Showcase would be held off. And like if the park opens at 8 a.m., then the World Showcase would open at 10. So this tour would allow you to go through the World Showcase at 8 a.m. So you don't have to worry about running down Jimmy, who isn't paying attention because he wants a Mickey Mouse doll.
Oh, right. Yeah. Disney has actually banned the use of Segways other than in their tours.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, one of the problems that it's had with all of this is that Segways are not technically graded for medical use. Mm-hmm. They are, although they can help people with disabilities move from one place to another, because DECA worked with Johnson & Johnson on some of their some of the gyroscopic platform technology. Uh-huh. Johnson & Johnson actually owns that copyright and for medical use. And
interesting.
So, yeah.
I did not know that. That didn't come up in my research. I know that on September 14th, 2006, they actually issued a recall for 23,000 Segways.
And that is all of them at that time.
That was all of them at that time, because there was a software glitch. And that software glitch would cause the wheels to occasionally and spontaneously reverse direction, which obviously that would be a bad thing. I mean, imagine...
If you're riding on it and you're not strapped into this thing, which you're not. Then...
Yeah. Well, it's like the way I explain it to people is that imagine you're walking down the street, and then suddenly the ground underneath you shifts direction the opposite way, you know, you would end up on your back pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, there were people who fell off the Segway, which, you know, when it was first introduced, that was one of the big things. As they were saying that, you know, because of all the gyroscopes, it'd be really, not that it'd be impossible, but it'd be
difficult.
Hard to
you
fall
would have
off.
To be trying.
But then what this software glitch, you know, made it very easy to fall off a Segway if it happened. And in fact, people were, ended up getting some injuries, like some broken wrists and things like that.
Yeah. There was a smaller recall back in 2003 because when the charge got too low, the Segway would just stop very abruptly. And so
you'd start tumbling off. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same sort of thing. I know that in 2009, Dean came and ended up selling the company, and he sold it to Jim Heseldon, whose last name I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing correctly. But
I'm not sure.
He was known as Jimmy.
Jimmy.
In the UK. And he was a guy who's a businessman and a philanthropist, really, really known for his philanthropic endeavors. And tragically, in September 2010, Heseldon died in an accident.
Involving a Segway. Yeah,
he was on a Segway, and he ended up falling off the edge of a cliff in a wooded area. He was in one of the off-road Segways.
Supposedly, he encountered a walker on a path and reversed to get out of the walker's way and tumbled over.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That's kind of unconfirmed. I think that I read that on Daily Mail or something
Yeah. So anyway, it was a tragic accident. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible thing, and I cannot say for certain, but I have a feeling that was part of what prompted Segway to insert. So if you go to visit the Segway website, a little Segway safety pop-up will appear and tell you that, you know, you need to review the safety procedures of and know how to ride a Segway in order for you to operate one safely. Mm-hmm. And so there's an actual pop-up that'll obscure your view of the Segway website until you, you know, dismiss it. And they even have a full video that explains, you know, how the Segway works and the best way to operate it safely so that you don't end up injuring yourself. And on February 28th, 2013, Segway was acquired by Summit Strategic Investments, LLC, which is the current company that owns the brand. And that's kind of where we are right now.
Well, just a few. Actually, on this March 6th, they announced the development of a three-wheel security device.
That's right.
Planned to be coming out in Q4 this year, 2013.
Yep.
Reading all about this kind of broke my heart because Cayman was so passionate about how this terrific device could really change the world and change people's lives and change our cityscapes for the better. And it fizzled so much. We talked about how the company debuted in 2002. They started selling the things. In 2006, they had only sold 23,000 units. They were hoping to have been selling 40,000 per year. Mm-hmm. A lot of things happened. It was it's been a tough time the past decade or so for consumer.
Right. Yeah. You've had economic downturns. Mm-hmm. You've had resistance on the part of many municipalities to allow the Segway to travel along things like sidewalks. Mm-hmm. There's also other just practical considerations. I mean, obviously, a Segway is great if you happen to live in a place where the climate is nice and mild.
Sure.
But if you are in a place that gets a lot of rain, a Segway is not, you know, you're not going to be covered in the rain. You're going to actually be out there. Mm-hmm. And depending upon how the Segway is made, it may not operate so well in the rain after a while.
Or, you know, like I've hung out in New Hampshire. There are many months in New Hampshire that I would not want to be riding a Segway down a sidewalk.
Yeah, so there's lots of reasons why the Segway adoption may have been slower. And I think the main one is just that, you know, we were so far along in the infrastructure that we rely on already.
Right.
Like we're so dependent upon a certain way for our cities to work, for us to get around in comfortably, that to expect a change in that is a little on the optimistic side. It would require a huge amount of effort, time, and money. And when I say a huge amount of time, I'm talking decades to really refit a city in such a way so it would be ideal for using something like a Segway. Particularly if you're in a city that has a fairly healthy pedestrian population. Healthy as in there are a lot of people out there walking.
Right, right.
Not necessarily that they're all in great health. Atlanta, not so great for pedestrians, I would say. I mean, pedestrians...
We have very few sidewalks outside of our main metropolitan areas. And, you know, that's the other thing with these Segways is that I think that the concept was always for them to be secondary to a car, to, like, have a car and then have the Segway in it and, you know, park the car somewhere and then take the Segway out and go about your business.
Right. Or if you happen to live, like, you know, 2 miles away from a market, then you could just take the Segway there.
And then you can use it for that, sure. But, you know, when these units cost over $5,000 a pop...
Yeah. And they weigh almost 100 pounds. Uh-huh. Then you know, it's not easy to carry them around.
Yeah, that's one of me. So that's, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Like, okay. So anyway, I'm just depressed now because I'm thinking about how much weight I need to lose before I come close to being a Segway. But anyway, yeah, there are a lot of reasons, I think, that explain why the Segway did not become the thing of the future. It was certainly an incredible innovation. It was a really interesting engineering feat. I've seen similar products come out that are based on the same general principles as the Segway. Some of them are things like motorized roller skates or a mm-hmm. motorized skateboard kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Honda came out with a unicycle-looking sort of thing that works on a similar basis. And yep. I think that Toyota, or I mean, they didn't come out with it. It's in prototype.
I've seen them at CES. I've seen a motorized, essentially it's a motorized unicycle that you stand on. And again, just like with the Segway, you would lean forward to indicate that you want to move forward. And I remember hearing that it takes about 30 to 45 minutes to kind of acclimate yourself to it, to where you can comfortably maneuver through an environment, say, I don't know, a giant conference room that's filled with hundreds of thousands of people, like CES.
Just for example.
If I had been on there, I would have probably mangled at least 40 or 50 people before I actually... No, let's be fair. I probably would have run over myself, and that would have been the end of it.
Right, yeah, yeah. And, you know, hypothetically, these things only go 12.5 miles an hour. That is on purpose. They have a speed limiter in them. That's the issue that caused the recall back in 2006. The speed limiter was malfunctioning.
Yeah. So, I mean, there were definitely ideas to make it as useful as possible and limit the possible malfunctions or injuries that could happen when people start using a technology that is a brand new mode of transportation. I mean, obviously, you have to take those things into account.
I hope you guys enjoyed this classic episode of Tech Stuff. I can always tell that they're a big hit by the amount of eye rolling that Tari gives me as she listens to my puns. If you guys have any suggestions for future topics for Tech Stuff, let me know. Let me know on Twitter or Facebook. The handle for us at both of those locations is TechStuffHSW. And I'll talk to you again really soon. TechStuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.